The following is a conversation with Arbab Ulhaq, a reverse figure in fitness and nutrition sphere. He opens up about his holistic approach to achieving peak physical condition, balancing diet for optimal health, and navigating the mental and physical demands of competitive bodybuilding. Arbab shares the strategies for overcoming common fitness hurdles, the importance of mental resilience, and the impact of community support in one's fitness journey. Join us as we delve into Arbab's insights on preparing for competitions like National Canada Pro Qualifier and the evolving landscape of fitness and nutrition. Through this podcast, I'm trying my best to talk to people who are in the trenches, fighting their demons every day. Only talking to successful people will give you a perspective of how the outline of your path looks like. But talking to people who are a few steps ahead and deep in the work, that has a completely different value. And I'm trying to lead this podcast to this avenue every day. It's not perfect, but I'm doing my best. Now, dear friends, this is Amirali Bileri Podcast, and here is my conversation with Arbab Ulhaq. Okay. In the work you do, one of the major focuses is on losing weight. Dealing with nutrition at any level is pretty complex, especially if you're trying to lose weight and you're in your 30s. So when it comes to constructing a diet plan, how do you balance macro and micronutrients?
Yeah, good question there. So you're talking about in terms of weight loss, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I think a lot of people get this wrong because people don't consider the idea of learning how to actually track their macros or even calories. Mm-hmm. But let's take a step back as well, right? Most people don't even know what macros are. They have an idea what calories are, right? But macros are not too sure. So the approach I like to take is, I think first most is teaching them about what macros are, right? And what's the importance of proteins, fats, carbohydrates, for example, right? But essentially, fundamental concept is that if you eat less than you're burning, you will lose weight.
And is that true?
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
And I think that's what I want to touch upon is that people are now overcomplicating it. Uh-huh. And now what's going around, like I see that a lot of the time, is that people question this concept, right? So they're like, oh, for me, maybe I'm eating 1,000 calories every day. I'm burning 2,500 calories, but I still can't lose weight. Something must be wrong. So I think at that point, it's important to kind of reflect back on yourself and think that you must be doing something wrong. The concept is there. That's never wrong. So I can guarantee you that if you are eating less than you're burning, you will drop weight 100%.
But that's also associated with not being satiated. So consistently staying hungry.
So that's
the stigma that brings up, because you might get any type of eating disorder just by the idea of, okay, if I'm not eating as much as I'm supposed to, therefore feeling hungry, I'm going to lose weight. And that's, I'm not sure if that's the healthiest approach.
I get it. That's true. But again, the concept is still there and it works, right? Okay. Obviously, if you're trying to lose weight while eating junk food and like processed foods, which are naturally higher on calories side, right? It will be harder for you to lose weight because then you can't eat that much volume of food, right? Let's give it some perspective. So let's say if I'm eating 1,500 calories, right? That could be maybe three different meals of 500 calories each, right? And that's if it's pretty clean food, if it's whole foods, if it's the general healthy food that we call it, right? Whereas if you just have one big junk food, right, meal, that itself could be 1,500 calories. So now there's two people, one's eating three meals a day, right? And the volume of food is pretty good. The other person's eating one meal a day. They're still both eating 1,500 calories. They still both drop the same amount of weight, but for one of them, it's significantly hotter than the other one. So I think, again, what you're saying is right and it's important, but what I find weird is that people question this concept. Mm. The concept is true and it works, mm. right? how you approach that weight loss and how you approach your diet, that could be different. So to come back to your first question, yes, eating in a calorie deficit is important, but you can do it smartly. You can have certain food choices that you can eat a lot of while not having that many calories.
Okay, so let's get a little bit specific about the situation. So imagine you're in your 30s, you don't have a certain performance goal. You don't want to become extremely buff like Sebum, or you don't want to become so fast like Cristiano Ronaldo or something. You just want to have a healthy diet,
yeah,
and have a healthy body. So how would the distribution of macros and micros be? What are the do's and don'ts, technically? Yeah. Very general.
Yeah, so very broadly. Again, to get more specifics, we'll have to dig into what type of work do you do, how active you are on a day-to-day basis, right? But let's take it very broadly, right? I think first step is to kind of figure out what your maintenance could be. So maintenance calories are the amount of food that you eat and you stay the same weight. So you don't drop weight, you don't gain weight. Why that's important to know? Because that kind of gives you a baseline of where to begin. So what I would do is, for example, your weight is 200 pounds. A simple formula I like to use is just multiply that by 10 to 12. So somewhere in the 2,000 to 2,200 calories.
Okay.
That's a pretty good starting point. Mm-hmm. The issue is people don't know how to eat 2,000 calories.
Yeah, that's
right.
Yeah.
So okay. They might think they're eating 2,000, but in reality, they're maybe eating 3,000, 3,500, right? And now they're gaining weight at 2,000 calories. So now, once again, they circle back and then they question the concept. Mm-hmm. So I think, yes. So to answer that question, yes, you just multiply that number by 10, 12, and you get your daily number of calories. That's a pretty good estimate that you're going to start losing weight. But it's important to know how to kind of get there and how to eat those many calories every single day. So that's calories. In terms of macros, what I would do is I would put your protein intake to whatever your goal weight is. So let's say you want to lose 20 pounds, you want to go down to 180 pounds. I would keep your protein intake to 1 or 0.8 times that weight. So for example, if you want to reach 180 pounds, just have 180 grams of protein to anywhere from 150 to 180 grams of protein every single day. That sounds a lot.
It does.
But it's not
expensive.
Yeah, it sounds a lot and expensive, but honestly, it's not that bad. Because people usually don't consider the protein they get from their dairy, protein from like their rice, their bread, right? So there's a lot of protein in like everything you eat. You just have to be kind of smarter with the choices you make. Having more meat sources, protein-rich sources there, I think that could help. And again, you could always supplement with protein, right? Which is really cheap if you break the cost down into like daily cost. It might sound expensive to buy a lot of protein at once, but also consider how long you're gonna use that for, right?
I see. Okay, we're gonna get more specific about the questions I'm gonna ask and we're gonna break them down.
Yeah.
But what are the major general differences between the diet that is used for being generally healthy and having an optimal weight? Versus the time you're trying to gain weight, build muscles, you're preparing for a competition, or you're just trying to look more athletic technically. So what are the differences between those?
Yes. So there's a lot of differences in the things you mentioned, right? So for example, competition prep would be completely different than when you're trying to put on muscle. That would be completely different than when you're just trying to maintain your muscle mass. That's also different, right? So let's start off with when you're trying to build muscle. So when you're trying to bulk up, right? So in this case, you want to be above what your maintenance calories are. Again, that baseline. So let's say if your baseline is 2,000 calories, right? You want to be maybe around 2,300, 2,500 calories if you're kind of pushing it. And you want to have a lot of your focus on, well, it's preference. I prefer to have a lot of my focus on my carbohydrates because that is the main source that you're using for your workouts. So again, timing also matters, yes, when you have those carbohydrates. But again, it's more important that you hit your calorie goal and macro goal every single day. Once that's done and that's pretty easy for you to do, then you can kind of play around with the timing as well, right? But again, more focus on carbohydrates. Protein, I would stick to the same amount as I described before, which is 0.8 to 1 times your body weight in pounds, or even lower. So when you're bulking up, when you're trying to put on muscle, you don't have to focus too much on your protein intake.
But aren't you supposed to build muscle? And you do that through, I mean, you do the majority of that through acquiring protein.
So there is enough
protein. In your bulking session, then you're going to lose all that muscle mass.
So why I say that is when you're cutting, you need preferably more amount of protein to make sure you preserve all that muscle mass.
Ooh, okay, makes sense, yeah.
Because as a natural lifter, right, when you're on a cut, you're very likely to lose muscle mass. Now, that depends. If you're cutting from 25% body fat to 15, you shouldn't be that worried. But if you're going from 15% body fat to like 8, that's a danger zone where you might lose a lot of muscle mass. So you want to be sure, and you just want to have a little bit more protein just as like a safety net, just to preserve as much muscle mass as possible. So again, bulking up, your main focus should be hit your calorie goal every single day, right? So eat more so that you can actually put on muscle and gain weight, right? Protein intake, it's important, but honestly, when you are eating more, naturally, you're also eating more protein. So it's not that hard to hit your protein goals when you're bulking. In terms of fats, I just like to kind of fill the rest of my calories in. So I would never, ever go below 50 grams of fats every single day, because that could interfere with your hormones. And so I just wouldn't go below 50 grams. Just stay above.
That's just too risky.
It's too risky. And I've been there. I've been on that no-fat diet where everything is just grilled chicken and just rice. And I never went that far. But but yeah, like things like very healthy and clean food. And I struggled with that. My hormones level were just, they just tanked. And I wondered why, like, oh, like I don't feel good in the gym. I can't get stronger, things like that. And then now it kind of makes sense with like the more knowledge that I have. I'm like, all right. You're not supposed to cut out the fats, right? It's not bad. Fats are not bad for you. You need them.
Okay. And what's the general approach to...
cutting?
We'll talk about that later. But just sure. Losing weight in a more general manner. I'm sure that if you're not trying to build that much muscle, if you don't need that much of a headache in your life, that's not a goal. You also don't want to do all the effort of counting your calories every single day, just being too self-conscious, not too self-conscious, but being just self-conscious about your diet. You probably don't want to have the cheat day. You want to eat whatever you like. Mm-hmm. So what are the differences between these?
Okay, very good question. So my approach to weight loss is a little bit different than the traditional weight loss approach. So far, everything I've told you is very like factual based, right? Hey, like do this, you'll lose weight, right? But like you said, that starts to sound kind of like, hey, I don't want to do all that, right? I don't want to track my calories. I don't want to do all this. It sounds too hard. I agree. And my approach is based on comfort. Mm-hmm. Which sounds weird, because weight loss is not supposed to be comfortable, right? Mm-hmm. That's what's embedded in our brains. But what if I told you that that's actually what causes a lot of people to fail when they're trying to lose weight?
Yeah, it makes right? sense.
Because like, think about it. How long can you do something every single day that you hate doing? Mm-hmm. You can't, right? So you're bound. You're making a routine for yourself that you're bound to quit sooner or later. So this is what I like to follow. It's called a CTN, weight loss protocol, right? So C being comfort, T being tracking, N nutrition.
Okay.
So let me break that down. C, your weight loss protocol, no matter what you're doing, no matter what you're following, has to be comfortable, all right? So at no point during that time, you should go like, oh crap, I gotta get a workout in. Or like, oh my God, I can't be bothered. Like, I'm so tired. It should not be there to a certain point, right? So what I mean by that is, like, people often start off their workout program or their weight loss program with like a 5 to 7 day workout plan, and it's fully packed in their schedule and they're all hyped up for like the first 2 weeks, and then boom, they just kind of burn out and they're like, you know what, I can't do this, right? And I'm sure you've seen a lot of...
I relate to that.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay, I see. All right, yeah, so that's a very common problem that I think everyone goes through, right? Rather, because one of the important factors of weight loss is, or general fitness in general, is progression. So if you're starting at 100 or like at 100 capacity, right? 100% of your capacity, how do you expect to improve on that and make progress on that? So you got to start pretty low. For example, if you have no fitness experience, I'm talking none, right? And you don't do any activity right now. Why don't you just start with like a 2 day plan? Just go to the gym twice a week for like an hour each time, right? And that's it. That's all you need. Start with that. Your weight will start to drop, right? And then slowly every single week, that's where you bring the progression into the play, because that's something that almost everyone misses. I'm like, hey, how's your weight loss journey going? They're like, yeah, good. This is what I'm doing. I'm like, cool. How long have you been doing that for? Like 3 months. So like they do the same exact thing for like 3-4 months without progressing anything on it.
So they plateau technically.
I mean, they would plateau eventually. Mm-hmm. Those were some people that's in 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. As soon as they hit plateau, they now start to question that concept. And they're like, oh, this is not going to work for me, and then quit. But what they're simply missing is that progression factor, right? So start with something comfortable, right? It doesn't have to be a crazy routine. It could be something very simple. Maybe just go on like a 20-minute walk outside every single day. And sometimes that's all you need to start your weight loss journey, right? So that's C. T is tracking. You got to know what you're tracking, or how are you going to track your progress? Is it going to be your body weight? Is it going to be your waist measurement? Is it going to be your physical pictures that you take every week, 2 weeks, right? I think easiest one of them is body weight. I think we can agree on that, right?
Yeah.
So again, make a routine out of that, right? Make a practice, make a habit out of that. So for example, track your body weight every single day and write it somewhere that you can actually see it. Mm-hmm. Don't just try and memorize it, right? Write it down. And that makes it easy to actually see how well you're progressing, and more importantly, to see when you plateau. Because that's one of the most important aspects of weight loss. And I think almost everyone just quits when they reach a plateau, even though that's not even like, that could be like 20% of your weight loss journey. So that doesn't mean it's the end of it, right? And then last part, nutrition. So nutrition, obviously it's important, and it's a scary thing, right? Because like, how am I gonna track calories? Like you said, it can get pretty exhausting. So you don't have to track calories, to be honest with you. You can learn how to track them just so that you can get a better idea of what you're eating. But essentially when you're starting off, just eat the healthy foods that we call it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we all know what's healthy, what's not. Don't eat the unprocessed frozen junk like in your freezer, right? And just go more towards whole good foods that you know are healthy, right? Everyone knows what's healthy and what's not. So I think honestly, and just sticking to those basics, that's it. There's no secret fat burning workout. Like, there's no high interval intensity training workout that you have to do. Anything could work for anyone. Just have those three things in line and you will lose weight. There's no way you won't if you follow each one of those steps.
Okay. So to summarize it, you have to find a routine that you can stick to it. You're consistent. That's the C part. It was the T part that allows you to visualize how you're doing over the consistency that you have provided.
Yeah, just any sort of tracking.
And the N is the nutrition, and you're just trying to feed your body some food that is actually helpful.
Exactly. So again, if you're a beginner for fitness, right, don't just start off with tracking your calories exactly per gram and everything. Start off with just eating healthy, right? And then every single week, just try and learn something new about nutrition. That's it. And I think once you do that within 2-3 months, you will know a lot more. And at that point, you're probably now ready to start actually tracking your calories and macros.
Okay, makes sense. Okay, let's talk about, let's dig deeper in the tangent of bulking and cutting, because that's more of your niche. When, okay, walk me through the timeline in which you're trying to gain muscle. Let's not go too crazy. If, let's say you're trying to add 10 kilos of weight, 5 kilos of muscle, for example, over this span of 3 months. Walk me through the timeline of when you bulk and when you cut, and the diet that you approach for both of these.
Yeah, of course. 3 months. So that's one of the, actually, that's one of the points I had here. One of the biggest problems people make when trying to build muscle is they don't stick to each phase. I'll explain that later. Each phase long enough. All right. So what are the phases? There's a bulking phase. There's a cutting phase. And then there's a maintenance phase, which is not that important, mm-hmm. but more importantly, the bulking and the cutting. 3 months, I would say it's not even enough for you to just bulk alone.
Well, that failed fast.
So you want to bulk. I would, honestly, if you can, as a beginner, the longer you can go on a bulk for, better it is, right? Mm-hmm. But 6 months is a good time, but I should clarify that. I'm not talking about dirty bulking.
What's dirty bulking?
That's where you eat whatever you want, and your only goal is now just to eat much food as possible, okay. Right? Problem with that is most people just put on so much fat that at that point, the cutting phase now needs to be like 8 months long for them to actually just remove the fat that they intentionally put on during the bulking phase.
And I believe it has to be as neat as the dirty the bulking was. So you really have to go on a very strict diet.
For bulking, you mean?
For cutting.
Yes. For cutting, okay. It's more strict than mm-hmm. bulking. But the reason why I say that, right, is a lot of people have this idea that dirty bulking will get them more muscle. Research has shown, like studies have shown, that that's not true at all, right? If you're going on a dirty bulk, which is again where you're eating whatever you want and just trying to eat as much as possible, most of the time that's fast food and just junk food, right? The amount of muscle you gain from that, let's say in 6 months, is very or has been shown very similar or the same to the amount of muscle you can gain while on a lean bulk. Mm-hmm. So lean bulk, the difference between that is now you're eating more, yes, than what you're burning, but just by slightly more, right? So you're eating about 300 calories more, 400, 500 calories more, right? Again, now we're kind of diving into deeper into specific calorie numbers. Forget about that. Simple difference, dirty bulking, you're just eating whatever you want. Clean bulk is where you're eating pretty clean food, just eating a lot of it. And let me tell you, that is hard. That's what I've been doing for about 8 months, mm-hmm. and it is hard. Like, it gets to a point where it's hard for you to actually eat that much food, right? Like, I'm eating now 6 to 7 meals a day, and it's hard, dude. Like, sometimes I'm sitting on my desk at 11 p.m. just trying to shove down food.
Oh, gosh.
It's hard, but again, you have to stick to it. If you don't stick to it long enough, this is what ends up happening, and this is what a lot of people do. They bulk for 2 months, and they're like, oh, crap, I'm getting fat or I'm getting chubby. I don't like it. And then they cut for a month. And then they're like, oh, I'm getting skinny. What the hell? Like, I didn't gain any muscle. And then they bulk for 2 months and then cut for a month. So they just kind of keep repeating that, right? And they make minimal progress. The weird part is that when you're choosing to bulk, you are signing up to kind of put on the fat. Like, you are doing that to yourself, right? Problem is that when people see that fat on their body, now they get scared, right? And now they turn away from it. And they just want to stay in that perfect zone where they're still kind of lean, but they want to put on muscle, but they can't because they don't want to put on fat. So it's just a cycle, right? You got to go on a phase, trust it, You could improve it, sure, as you go on, but whatever, trust the process, right? And just stick to it for long enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I can guarantee you, if you stay on a bulk for about 6 to 8 months, like a proper bulk, you're training hard, you're eating good, and by that I just mean, you know, eat healthy, eat decent amount of protein. Again, nothing too crazy and detail-oriented. Just eat healthy, eat a lot of protein, right? And in terms of training, train really hard. That's something people get wrong about bulking. You're not just going in the gym and just doing whatever you feel like. Your training has to be structured, and it has to be planned every single week. And you're supposed to know what numbers you ideally want to hit, for example, the next week.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of you keep chasing that goal up, right? You keep getting stronger in the gym. And that's how you build muscle.
I see.
Problem is, people do whatever they want in the gym, and then they don't track anything in the gym, right? So they don't track how much they're lifting, how many repetitions they're performing. And before you know it, it's been 4 months, and they're doing the exact same numbers, exact same thing every single day for 4 months. No wonder you didn't put on any muscle,
mm-hmm.
right?
That makes sense.
So does that cover? Does that cover what you were asking?
It does. Yeah. Is there any? Actually, we'll talk about the mental stuff later.
Let's put that.
I wanted to talk about the mentality, but we'll talk about it later. I just had a very small personal question before going to the tangent, to the next tangent. Do manufacturer sources of protein actually work or not? At least in your experience, do you think protein powders, do they work, number one, and are they an optimal source of protein?
What do you mean by do they work?
It's hard for me. Okay, if you want to gain muscle that is going to stay after you cut, and let's say you go on a strict diet, you bulk, you build muscle, you cut, you maintain it, and you follow a normal, healthy diet, not too crazy, but you still can keep that muscle.
Oh yeah, 100%. So whey protein is actually one of the best sources of protein you can have. A lot of people have that misconception that whey protein is bad for you or it might cause some side effects.
Mm.
It's not. But I should be clear, it's a supplement. So again, you don't need it, right? In my case, for example, I take protein just because it's convenient, right? I live alone. So like when I wake up, instead of having a breakfast and getting some meat source early in the morning, I just get a protein scoop, put it in my oatmeal, and there you go. I have my carbs, I have my protein. It's pretty easy to go, right? It's a supplement. You only need it if you need help getting to your protein goal number.
I see.
Again, that's not hard. People make that seem like it's harder than it actually is. It's actually pretty simple to hit that goal. But again, that now comes to, do you know how to track? Are you tracking properly, right? So again, it's a whole cycle, right? So if you know how to track, then you would kind of realize that it's pretty easy to hit your protein goal and you don't need it. So you don't need these protein sources. If you're taking it, is there anything wrong with it? No, there's nothing wrong with it. Some of them are a waste of money. So for example, you know, I might get hate for this, but BCAAs.
Can you elaborate what BCAA is?
Yeah, they're essentially amino acids that you can take. People usually take them intra-workouts, like during their workout, and it's supposed to help with recovery and muscle growth, but it's shown that it's not doing much. So if you want to, and if you have the funds and you like the taste, honestly, you could take it. But I would save my money and I would just not buy that. And I would just focus on sources such as whey protein isolate. I would focus on casein, which is another type of protein powder. But BCAAs, I wouldn't focus on that. Something better you can take is EAAs, which are essential amino acids.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the amino acids that your body cannot make. Again, it's not needed. I used to take them very long time ago. I'd never take them now. So again, it's something you could take. It's been shown to have a little bit more benefit than BCAAs, but just whey protein, I think that's all you need. And again, that's only if you are having a hard time hitting your protein growth or your protein goal.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
I see. Okay. Let's go to the next one. You have competed twice. Oh, you wanted to add something?
Sorry, okay, I just wanted ahead. To add, yeah, one more point to the muscle gaining okay. part that we talked about, bulking, right? We kind of briefly touched upon how important it is to train properly in the gym, right? Train hard. But I think in this case, people are on two extremes.
Mm-hmm.
They either get it wrong because they're not training hard at all, or they get it wrong because they're trying to optimize every little thing about their workouts, right? As a beginner, I'm talking about, right? So as a beginner, if you're trying to optimize every single thing, I think it's you're better off just focusing on muscle groups as a whole, right? So if you're training your back, don't worry too much about if I do my exercise with this angle, it's gonna hit this little part of my muscle better. Forget about that, right? Like you just need muscle at this point. Like you're not supposed you to muscle at this yeah, point. You're not supposed to worry about what part of my muscle is not as strong as my other part. You're just gonna build it up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think at that point it's better to focus more on compound movements and just making sure you're training well and you're training everything rather than pinpointing on these small muscle groups. And then the other part was, like I said, a lot of people do the opposite, so they're not training hard at all. What I mean by that is, if I ask people, and this happens a lot, if I ask someone, break it down in the last 3 months, every single week, how did you progress in whatever, for example, bench press? And they just look at me, they're like, what are you talking about? I just bench press every week, right? And I do the same amount every single week and I try and push myself to the max.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is because they're not recording their data,
mm-hmm.
so you could write it down on a notebook, on your phone, whatever. Because they're not doing that, they end up doing the same thing for who knows how, like how long, like 3 months without making any progress. And so that's called progressive overload. So that's a concept where every single week you're trying to progressively overload your muscle
mm-hmm.
with something more than last week. Now that could be weight, that could be repetitions, that could be better control, better form, whatever. But point is that you need to improve every single week something about your workouts.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if you have these two things in check, I think you want to be in the middle. You don't want to be on either extremes. Again, as a beginner. I think just wanted to touch upon that.
I see. Okay, makes sense. Perfect. Let's go back to the tangent I had initially started. you have, if I'm not mistaken, competed in National Canada Pro Qualifier.
Yes.
Twice.
Once in the Pro Qualifier and then once in the regional show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you break down the structure of your training phases throughout, because I believe the training period is a year. You can correct me, please do. But what's the planning in overall? What's the planning of your training, and how do you adjust your workout to prevent any plateaus?
All right. So two. We'll start from broad, and then we'll kind of dig deeper into them, right? So broadly speaking, two phases. There's off season and there's prep season, right? Off season is where now you are on a bulk, ideally, or you're trying to maintain.
Sorry for interrupting. What's the timeline right now? Is it for a year? Like, can you break it down?
The timeline, it doesn't matter that much. What matters is when is your competition date. Right.
Okay.
So whenever the time is that your competition date is, ideally 12 to 16 weeks before that is when you start your prep.
Okay.
What the prep would be is ideally a cut, right? Just trying to get as low of a body fat as possible for your competition day. Now, again, that timeline could vary depending on your starting point. If you're pretty lean starting out, then you don't need that much time to prepare for the competition, right? If you're not as lean, then you need more time, right? So I guess that depends. But essentially, off season is where you're not preparing for any competition. You're just off the season, right? And now you're just trying to bulk up, ideally, put on as much muscle as possible. So again, that would go into your bulking diet, trying to eat more, trying to eat clean still. Not that much emphasis on your protein. Again, you want to hit your goal, but it's pretty easy to hit when you're bulking. More emphasis on your carbs. Very, very important factor is your training. So you need to really put your training in control and have a well-structured program there. And then in terms of on-season, again, about 12 weeks, could go up to 16 weeks. That's when you start off. Now your training volume during that time would probably decrease. Because you want
volume, you mean the weight technically you would be able to
carry? No, how frequently you're lifting and how much time you're putting in lifting, for example.
Okay,
so that would be the volume. So how many sets, for example, you're doing of each exercise in a week of each muscle group, that would decrease. Why? Because when you are in a deficit, which means when you are trying to cut weight, your body is kind of fragile. So you really want to make sure that your recovery is in check. And if your volume is too high and your body can't recover enough, you literally get sick. Like you would just catch a flu or something and you just fall sick. And that's the last thing you want in your prep, because then you lose about a week, 2 weeks of your prep, depending on how bad it is, right? So that comes into another topic that we wanted to dive into, which is natural athlete versus enhanced and what the difference would be competing as a natural athlete. The main difference would be you really, really, really need to prioritize your recovery, because being a natural, you're kind of at a disadvantage there. So again, you want to make sure your sleep is optimal. You want to make sure, again, your food, even though as a, in a cut, you're not eating that much, but you want to make sure those food sources are nutritious, right? And you're having all your vitamins, all your macros, micronutrients in check. But more importantly, yes, sleep and your workout volume would differ with that. So does that kind of answer?
It does.
Yeah.
And can you please touch on how to prevent plateaus?
Plateaus, yes. In general?
Technically, yeah. But yeah, let's get more specific in your training.
Because you hit a plateau when you're trying to build muscle?
Yes.
Or when you're trying to cut weight? Both ways.
No, but when you're trying to build the muscle.
So when you're trying to build muscle. Mm-hmm. All right. So most common plateau, again, like we talked about, one of the most important factors you need to make sure is your training, right? You need to push harder every single week. So the most common plateau I see is like, hey, I physically cannot push any more weight, or I cannot progress every single week, like I talked about, right? In that case, there's quite a lot of things that could be going on. For example, something as simple, if your weight is also plateaued and you're not really gaining any more weight, it could simply be that you just need to eat a little bit more. What I mean by that is only like 100 calorie difference, just, or maybe slightly more, and maybe that's all you need, right? Again, if your timing of your meals is kind of off, then that's something that could be causing a plateau. That's not that common, but it could happen. So again, just by fixing your meals before your workout, after your workout, you could feel better in the gym. You could push.
If it's after your workouts.
Well, not after, actually. Before. Okay, after, okay, would be more important for just recovery and, okay, actually growth, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, before your workout.
Okay.
That could impact how you feel in the gym, how you perform in the gym. And again, if you feel better, then you progress more, right? So again, it could be your calories. It could be your pre-workout, maybe, right? It's not too often, but it could be that. Or it could be something that you need a break. Because lifting, trying to lift more every single week and training really, really hard every week is really taxing on your body.
Yeah.
So that's where the third phase comes into play that we talked about, the maintenance phase.
Can we go over the phases again? So it was the button phase. The second phase was
cutting
and then
maintenance. Okay. So there's three phases, right? So bulking, cutting, very important. Maintenance is more important when you reach a plateau. So let's say you're trying to build muscle, right? Like we talked about, you reach a plateau, you try to eat more, still a plateau, you just feel like crap in the gym, you can't lift as much or at least progress every week, then maybe all you need is just a break, right? So what that means is maybe you take a week off, not entirely off of training, but now your training is like, it's pretty chill. Like you can just go in the gym, you're just happy, smiling, jumping around, lifting weights, like, you know, you're all happy. So you could do that for a week. And then you'll be surprised that the next week you get in, you are much stronger, you look better, you feel better, and sometimes that's all you need.
So it's just letting the body catch up with all the changes.
So again, that's based on recovery. Your body just needs some recovery time, and that's kind of what the maintenance phase is used for. Could be a week. If your body's really fried up, maybe 2 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. So again, this is when you're still trying to take care of your diet, yes, but it's not as rigid. So you're kind of going with the flow. Again, with the gym too, you're following the same structure. You're just lifting, for example, half the amount of weight for half the amount of reps. So you're taking it pretty easy.
And that's applicable to your training as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So everything that I'm talking about, I do the same things. It's nothing special that I do. When you're preparing for a comp, you can't have that one day off. Mm-hmm. That people are like, oh, I worked so hard for this week, let me just, I deserve this, right? You don't get that part in your competition prep. But other than that, it's pretty much the same concepts.
Let's talk about mentality now. How do you get over the, because if you're preparing for a competition, you're going through a diet change, body changes, of course your testosterone level will also change. Overall, your hormones will, of course, be affected. Your sleep schedule is changing. Of course, you're sleeping more to allow yourself to recover, but your entire life is now based on this competition. So, and that can be taxing, that can be very tiring. Your social life is being affected. So how do you go into the process by adjusting your mindset, and how do you maintain that mindset? Because that's the harder part.
All right. Interesting. Dude, it's hard. It is hard. Like, I cannot I can't even describe how hard it is because of this. Let me explain, right? So before jumping into competition preps and competing, I knew competition prep is hard, right? I've been following this sport for a while, all my life, basically, right? I love it. And I know how hard it is from other people's experience, right? But when I went on my prep, the last 4 to 5 weeks were hell because of my mental barriers that I had, my mental challenges that I faced. So not physical challenges, which is what a person would expect, right? When you're trying to really push your body to its limits, it was the mental problems. It was the mental challenge that you had to face. Let me tell you what that means a little bit more. It's really hard to describe, but let me give you a perspective, right? So you wake up and your body hurts, dude. Like, you're in pain, right? But you have to get up. You have to go to do your cardio every single morning for 50 minutes, an hour of just cardio. As soon as you wake up, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be as soon, but that was my routine, right?
So that's what I'm telling you. Yeah, you're walking us through your brain now.
Yeah. So again, I know I can push my body. I know I can push myself. But it's that feeling of waking up and just feeling like crap, right? Waking up and I mean, knowing that I am doing this to myself. No one's forcing me, right? And I have to do this. I want to do this. But it's just that every single morning you have to get, and just a countdown that's kind of going on, right? Like, oh, come on, man. That's like 14 more days, 13 more days, 12 more days. So I think that part is really difficult. And then the food cravings that you get, dude, holy crap. The last 4 weeks are insane. Like, I could do some bad stuff just to get some food, right? Like, it was at that point, like, where I was constantly, the only thing I was thinking about was food. That's it. Like literally, I'm trying to study, I'm trying to do my work, whatever. I'm just thinking about my next meal. That's it. Other than because that,
at this time, at this period specifically, I think you are starving yourself.
Basically, yes. You're
cutting, of yes. course. Yeah.
At that, because yeah, you cut. Sure, the first few weeks are like, oh, you feel amazing. You see the results. You see your body change. Amazing, right? When you get to that point of where you can, you let me give you a perspective on that too. So I got to a point where I could just, I could see veins running down my stomach. That's something hard. Because you can see veins, for example, on your arms when you work out, right? That's fine. When you cut down, you can see veins on your shoulders. Cut down more, you start to see veins on your chest. That's really hard. But then when you start to see that shit on your stomach, dude, that's when it's getting hard and that's getting when it's getting real, right? So I think that at that point, the food cravings bad. And like you said, your hormones just crash. So if your testosterone crashes, you feel like crap. Your mood is crappy, right? You don't want to do anything. Your motivation is crap, which is ironic because you're competing for a prep. I mean, yeah. You got to do more than what you were doing like a few weeks back, like way, way more, right? So I think just that part of having no motivation, having no energy levels. Oh my God, the energy levels, dude, they were like, I had to drag myself. The last week, let me tell you this, it was hard for me to talk. I couldn't talk to people, dude. Or like sometimes I would come off as rude because someone would talk to me and I can't reply. I can't be bothered. Like I can't reply. And I tell them like, I'm sorry, but it's just, I'm on my prep. I have this weird poker face and I seem angry, but it's just that I'm hungry and I'm just visualizing my next meal, right? So that's it. So I think just that part of feeling like crap, but knowing that you really have to be in the gym for 2-3 hours every single day, I think that part is hard. And then if you're alone, which I was here, I was alone, have to prepare all my meals myself, that really, I think, was very that was pushing my limits. Yeah, that was pushing my limits. But yeah, I think at that point, family support, friend support can make a huge difference because just people around you kind of pushing you to keep going. That makes a huge difference. But if you're alone, you've got to be careful with that stuff because it gets dangerous.
Yeah. I know the past three or four days, you also went off water to just get that final definition. How was that experience?
Yeah, so the final week of competition prep, it's called peak week. It's okay. Called peak week, right? So that's where you're trying to peak your body at its best before your crash. So it's a matter of timing, right? And I think,
because you are eventually going to crash.
Oh yeah, you're waiting for a crash. Like it's going to happen, right? And we can talk about that crash as well. But yeah, so peak week, you talked about water, right? For natural athletes, I would actually not recommend cutting water. I would stay away from that. I think that's more important for enhanced athletes because they tend to hold more water on their body. For naturals, at least that was my approach. I did not play around with water. I did not play around too much with sodium. I just played around with my carbohydrates. Do you want me to dig a little bit deeper into the science behind that?
Sure, yeah.
So your muscles store glycogen, right? As their energy source, which is made from carbs with water. All right. So that's where the water idea comes from. That what happens is that a few days before your competition, you deplete your body of carbohydrates. And I'm talking like no carbohydrates, dude. And those 3 to 4 days are literally the worst days of your whole prep. Because when you're not on carbs, your brain works on carbohydrates. So you're literally like brain dead. Like you cannot think, you can't process things properly. And that could, it sounds dangerous, but it could get dangerous. I mean, yes, it is dangerous. I'm not going to lie there. I told my parents, I'm like, it's all good. It's not dangerous, but it is dangerous, right? So that's the idea. You cut your body of carbohydrates And that's where the idea of cutting your water as well came in. You deplete your muscles of glycogen. And the idea is that before your competition, like right before your competition, like a day or 2 days before, you load as much as possible of water and carbohydrates. So now your muscles kind of overcompensate and store more than usual.
Ooh, okay.
And that kind of gives you that puffy look. So I did that with carbs. I think it works. I think it worked pretty well for me. More well for the second time around than the first. But we can dig onto that later as well. But with water, why I say it's not important is because your body is really smart with water. The idea that you cutting water for a day before competition and your body just dehydrates that water and releases that water, it's not, well, in my opinion, it's not true, right? Because your body's pretty smart with that, and because of the hormone changes, within an hour or 2 hours, your body stores whatever water is in there and holds on to it, right? Because your body wants that, it's looking for that baseline, right? It doesn't want to go below that or above that, right? That's why if you drink too much water, you just kind of pee it all out. And if you stop drinking water, then you don't pee, right? And you don't release it because your body holds on to it. Another part of that is because your vasculature is a lot made up of water. So depleting water, you don't want to get rid of your vasculature, right? You want to be able to see your veins. You want to have a nice pump when you're on stage. So that actually goes against that. So I think it works better for enhanced athletes, because they tend to hold on to more water because of the enhancements that they're taking, right? But for natural athletes, I don't think, in my opinion, that's important. I think just play around with your carbs. Again, I think the most important thing that I kind of messed up in my first week, or my peak week for the first time, was to not try anything new. You've been on a strict diet for 12 weeks. And then the last week, just the day before your competition, you're shoving down like chocolates and shoving down cereals to kind of load up on all these carbohydrates that you haven't, like you didn't eat that for about 12 weeks, 13 weeks, 14 weeks. Your body's not used to that. Your gut's not used to that, right? So you want to keep your gut health in check, especially during peak week. Very important. So I think, again, yes, play around with your carbs. But the sources of your carbohydrates, keep it the same, exact same as what you were eating or consuming your whole prep. And that's really, really important. I can't emphasize that enough. Do not think that the peak week, the last week of your prep, is going to make a change. It's not. It could make a change in a bad way where it could ruin your physique, right? But to improve it, it might improve it by like 1%. But it won't do much. If you're ready, you're ready. If you're not, you're not. Simple as that. And if someone's telling you that, hey, peak week, I'm going to have the secret protocol and it's going to get you shredded in a week, just run away, dude. Do not follow their advice. It's not true.
Okay, let's talk about the crash you were mentioning.
Yes.
You get off that stage. Now you can eat whatever you want to have.
It's dangerous. Whatever
you've been craving for. And you're going to go blastic.
And I did.
Oh, boy. How was that?
Oh, I think that's the best feeling ever. Like, I can't describe it, honestly. I was having a normal donut. I think it was just a normal Tim Hortons donut, Boston cream maybe. And bro, that felt like the best dessert I've had in my life. And I was the happiest at that point. I think if I can replicate that day for the rest of my life, I will be the happiest man alive. like the happiness that I got from that was amazing. And then it is dangerous. Because it's a floodgate that's waiting for you to open it. Once you open it, bro, you might think that, hey, I'm just going to indulge in whatever I'm craving for a week, 2 weeks, and then just go back on my diet. 9 out of 10 people don't. When you start eating the sugar, the crap that you've been craving for 12 weeks in an uncontrolled manner, that's a disaster. That I think almost every athlete goes through, and the irony is that every athlete knows that they're not supposed to do this, But then every one of them thinks, ah, I can control. I can control myself, right? I did this 12-week prep. Come on, like, I can't control for, like, after a week. Of course I can. And then 3 weeks later, they've put on 20 pounds. And it gets dangerous because putting that much amount of weight that quickly, right? Mostly water weight, yes, I agree. But putting that much amount of weight that quickly is so heavy on your heart that that could really be dangerous.
How much increase in weight is usual after your competition?
It depends. I think, so I prepped both times without a coach. I was doing everything on my own, which I would not recommend. But in my case, I wanted to learn. I want to learn this sport, right? So, and I want to, that's why I decided to take it on my own. First prep I did, I learned so many things. And I thought, oh, my second prep, I'm going to fix everything. And that's going to be the final, final look and the final prep protocol that I'll have, right? I did that. And now I learned so many things from that prep, right? So I think it's an ongoing cycle and you need to learn from that, right? But anyways, I did it on my own. And wait, what was your question again?
My question was, how much weight do you
expected to put on?
Increase after a competition when you, I believe you're back in a healthy, balanced diet?
Yeah.
Okay.
So. Yeah, okay. Yeah, back to that, yeah. I don't think there's any certain amount of weight that you expected to put on, in, per se, right? But in my case, I'll talk about my case, right? I think I messed up my prep in a way because I depleted myself way too much, where after my prep for 3 weeks, I was indulging on everything I could. I was eating cakes every day. I was eating out every day. I was going out to like eat all you can eat sushi like multiple times a week, like 3-4 times a week, right? And I'm indulging a lot. Believe it or not, I did not put on any weight. Yeah. What when about, I tell that to people, they're like,
definition though.
Sorry?
What about muscle definition? Did you still have your...
Oh, I had crazy amounts of... like, because think about all that food. My workouts were amazing. I looked like not myself in the gym in a good way, where I looked phenomenal in the gym, right? And this is what I'm talking after my competition, which is why I believe maybe I depleted myself too much, where I think that was kind of my peak. So remember how I was talking about the peak timing? So
maybe it is a good idea to change things up a little for the fast, for the last 2 or 1 week.
Right. So I said, yeah, what? Okay. So let me correct myself there, right? What I meant is you're not supposed to change too much about the type of things you're eating, but in terms of depleting yourself and then trying to not deplete yourself, kind of recover, that's important. Yes. You're supposed to change that, right? Mm-hmm. And I did that, but I think I did not do that enough. Because I was afraid of that going overboard on it and ruining my physique. That was my biggest fear because I'm like, I've done this for 12 weeks. I don't want to just ruin it because I just went all out for a week, right? But I think the first time around, I definitely missed my peak because, dude, for 3 weeks, holy crap, I was eating so much food. I was not gaining weight and I just kept looking better and better and better and every single day, right? Until that 3 week mark. After that, that's when the fat started to put on, right? And I'm like, okay, now I need to calm down, right? So in my case, it's slightly different because I think I missed my peak, or actually I peaked later on after my prep, which is not ideal. But again, that's where I learned about it, right?
I see.
Second time round was much better. I think I peaked pretty well for my prep, for my competition. I still think I could have peaked better. But that time around, I think it was still pretty good. But I learned from my mistakes, and I did not indulge that much. I still went crazy for a week, but after that, I had it in control. So to come back to your question, for me, I noticed that if after my competition, I do indulge for a week, go crazy, it's not that bad. I actually don't put on that much. Or maybe it's that maybe I'm just not going crazy all out, even though I think I am, but maybe I'm not going that crazy as some people do that do end up putting 10, 15, 20 pounds in a matter of a week, 2 weeks. But also importantly, that part, so the people who have heard that they did that, they were enhanced. So that's like, I heard about their experiences talking, they were talking about that. So maybe that's something you got to be more careful when you're enhanced, right? But regardless, you got to be aware of that, because getting back to track is super hard. Even if you don't put on that much weight, getting on back on track, even for me, was extremely difficult.
I see. In the footage of your competition, there was a difference between the volume of muscle and the muscle definition between your upper body and lower body. So is it because was your focus ultimately on the lower on the upper body because of the type of the competition, or is it just because you didn't have enough time to prepare for it?
So my focus was more on my upper body because I was doing men's physique, and you gotta wear like longer shorts or board shorts. So they do judge your upper body. They don't judge your lower body, which kind of sucks. So that's why my focus was more on upper body. But to bring on that, my legs are my weak point. So what I do is, on my off season now, I am focusing more on my leg days. So I have a higher emphasis on my leg workouts. I want to make sure that, all right, sure, even if I had a push workout and it wasn't the great whatever, my leg workout has to be good. Doesn't matter if I'm feeling off. Doesn't matter if I don't feel like going today, if like, oh, I feel a bit tired. It has to go as I planned it, right? Because that's my weak point. So I need to focus more on it. I need to push myself more on it and kind of bring it up in match to my body, right? So I think everyone's got weak points. Depends on every person. Some people, their chest might be a weak point. And by weak point, I mean genetically, that is your weak point. It is harder for you to put muscle there. Whatever that is, you just need to put more emphasis on it. And again, that could mean in how you structure your workouts, in how you plan on what day you hit what workout, depending on your energy levels, how likely you are to skip that day, things like that. You just want to put more of your focus on whatever you're lacking or whatever your weak point is.
Yeah, makes sense. How is the, I wonder how the, because you will be changing your workout routine in a more unbalanced way toward your upper body. So how did overall your posture change because of that routine? And how did you feel? Because I believe there would be differences in how you walk, because the difference in the distribution of weight. So was that a big challenge? Is that something you can handle for a competition, or is it something you have to take into account?
So let me rephrase that. By saying my focus was more on my upper body, not in terms of training, more in terms of posing.
I see. Okay.
So I think posing is a very, very big part of competition prep. Mm-hmm. And I neglected that. And I think every beginner does neglect that, right? Unless you have a good coach who kind of tells you and teaches you how important that is. And I think no one realizes that, right? I'm sure even if I mentioned, before I mentioned it to you, you didn't think that posing was supposed to be part of your prep, right? Mm-hmm. But think about it. You're doing all this prep to showcase your physique. How do you showcase it? You pose.
You have to practice for that. Yeah.
So if your posing is off, then you don't actually showcase it how you're supposed to. And maybe you don't showcase it to the best of your ability. Right? So I think my posing, my biggest issue was my leg placements. That makes a huge difference. So how I was placing my foot on the ground, how it's supposed to be lined up, how it's supposed to, in what direction it's supposed to face the judges, I neglected that. And I think that was something that I need to work on from now on. And so when I say that, I think that's what I meant, is that in terms of my posing, my whole focus was, how do I look? How do I look in terms of my chest, my angle of my shoulders, things like that. My arms are good. All right, I'm leaning too forward. I'm leaning too back, right? Everything like that. But I did not focus. How do my legs look? Are they too cramped up? Do they look awkward? Are they too wide? which direction am I facing on, right? And I realize now when I look back on my competition footage, I see that that is what makes my posing awkward. That's what kind of, because another part of your posing is, sure, you're supposed to showcase your body in the best of your ability, but you're supposed to seem confident. And I think based on your flow, how you're moving on stage, right, with your foot placements, that kind of gives that feeling of how confident the person at least portrays the posing as, right? So I think that's what I meant by that. In terms of your focus on muscle groups, in terms of training, that for me was not different during my prep. It was pretty much the same. So I train each muscle group twice a week. I've done that for a long time, and I still do that. Yes, twice a week. So that doesn't mean that you could still train it once a week. There's nothing wrong with that. But then your workouts will probably be longer, so the workout volume for that day might be a bit larger, right? If you're doing it twice a week, just break that into half, split that into 2 days. So it's pretty simple. So it's not as bad as it sounds.
I'm assuming you will be... How is your split? How is your split routine? Is it... Do you focus only on the lower body for 2 days and then... Okay, walk me through the routine of your workout. Do you work out once every day, or is it more than once every day? Or let me formulate my question better. Walk me through your workout routine every day. If it's once, if it's more than that, we'll let me know. And how do you split the workouts in between the muscle groups?
Yeah, sure. So I work out 5 days a week right now. And again, that also depends on the phases that you're in. I'll briefly touch on that later. But right now I work out 5 days a week. So I start off my days with leg day. Then I go into my push day. So push is your chest, shoulders, triceps. Yeah, that's it. And then I do my pull days. And then in my pull days, I also focus a little bit on my weak points. So I would train my calves a little bit more at that point. But that's going into too much detail now. So yeah, my pull days, which are my back, biceps, a bit of my shoulders. And then I take a rest day. So again, 3 days, rest day. And then I do my lower body split, upper body split, and then rest day. So again, leg, push, pull, rest, lower body, upper body, rest. Again, leg day, push, pull, rest. So again, it's a whole 7 day split, and I just repeat that.
How long does each training session take?
An hour.
Okay.
So not that long at all. I used to be a person who would be in the gym just 2 hours, just kind of, but then honestly, after an hour of intense workout, like if your workout is intense enough, an hour is all you need. And actually after an hour, you're not even as productive anymore. You're just kind of in the gym, sure, but you're not lifting properly. You're not lifting intense enough. I think a better question for that would be more broken down into the volume of the workout, which means, okay, so this is how it works out. For example, for my big muscle groups, so like chest, back, shoulders, right? I like to put in maximum like 8 to 10 working sets a week. What do I mean by working sets? For each muscle group.
Okay.
So working sets are different than your warm-up sets.
Yeah.
Warm-up sets, you just kind of, for example, 40%, 60% of the weight, trying to warm up your joints, like you said, right? But more importantly, you're trying to warm up in that same motion. So for example, if I'm doing chest press, I'm warming up with a lighter weight, 40% of my working weight, and I'm training in that same movement, the same tempo, the same control, same speed, and I just do about 5, 6, 7 reps, whatever it takes you to warm up. How many warm-up sets? That depends on you, how many you need. 1 to 2 is pretty good. And then I just dive into my working sets. Again, for my big muscle groups, I don't go above 8 to 10. I like to stick to 8, to be honest. 8 sets, working sets of my big muscle groups. Smaller muscle groups, I would push that to maybe 10 to 12 working sets. And then the muscle groups that are lacking, I would now push that to 12 to 15. So that's how you focus on the muscle group that's lacking, not necessarily in terms of how it's divided in terms of the split, but more so in terms of the workout volume, which comes down to the number of sets that you're giving in.
So technically the game here is to proportionally distribute your workouts throughout the week, not throughout the month or throughout your entire training. Maybe in the larger scale.
In the larger scale, yes. Okay. So that's now we're diving into our mesocycles of our workouts, or you can just call them phases of your workouts. It's important, yes. But I think that's a step after you have your kind of weekly split in place, right? And you're happy with that. Then the next step is to think about, all right, how am I going to handle that month or every 2 months or every 3 months, whatever your phases or your cycles are, right? So that would depend kind of on that part where I touched upon bulking phase, maintenance, cutting phase. So if your bulking phase is that 6 months, then you might have two mini phases in there, right? Approximately 3 months each, with like a maintenance small phase in between, right? So again, you would 6 months total bulk, you would go really hard, make sure you progress every single week for, let's say, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, take a week off, not off, but you know, like in terms of intensity, take it off or take it lower, lower a notch for a week, and then dive back into your second part of your bulk. Again, try and push it all the way through until you hit your 6 month mark. And then that could be 6 months, 8 months, a year, 15 months, whatever your goal is.
I see.
But again, that part is, you can kind of just go with the flow, go with how you feel. I think I need to take a maintenance, go with the maintenance and then go on it. Or you can go with a particularly structured program. That's up to you. I think as a beginner, the structured program helps because you don't know the feeling of when you need a maintenance phase. But I think as you go on and you become an advanced lifter or an intermediate lifter, I think you can judge pretty well when you need to take some time off for a maintenance phase, whether that's going from your cut or your bulk, whatever the way is.
Can you walk me through the inner voice you have on the last couple of weeks that is left to just motivate yourself and not let yourself go down, Susan, by donuts from Tim Hortons?
Yeah. Yes, I think everyone's inner voice is slightly different. I think that's with everyone. You're more harsh towards yourself than you are to other people, obviously, right? And we end up being, like I said, harsher to ourselves. Mm-hmm. My inner voice is a bit weird, where it's like there's no other way. Like, you have to get through this, right? I think my biggest factor was that I chose to do this, right? Knowing where I'm going, I decided to compete. This is my choice. And if it's causing me that much of a problem, just cancel my show and just eat food. So I think keeping myself accountable for my actions, not even in terms of a competition prep, in terms of life in general, I think that's what keeps me going, right? Because at the end of the day, no matter what you're trying to achieve, you should tell yourself that it is your decision. So stop blaming other people. Stop blaming your situations, your environments, your family, your friends, whatever. Blame yourself. And I think once you learn to blame yourself, you're unstoppable. Because whatever you're doing, it's your choice. Whatever you're not achieving, whatever you're struggling with, it is because of you, right? You can find 100 different ways that you can blame it on. But I think it's more important if you stay accountable, put the blame on yourself, and decide to do something about it. Because at the end of the day, whatever problem you're facing, you either stay wherever you are or you do something about it. No one else cares. You might think your mom cares. You might think your dad cares. You might think, I mean, yes, your family does care to a certain point, but it's all you, man. You are on your own, and it's up to you what you need to do. That's exactly what I had my inner voice tell me every single day on my prep, every single day right now when I wake up. I'm like, this is me. I chose to do this. So if I wake up right now and if I decide that I don't feel like getting up, I'll just sleep in for the extra 2 hours, I am doing that to myself. And just in the near future, like 4 hours later, I will regret that decision. And I know that. But what surprises me is how people choose to ignore that and just go on with it, do it, and then regret it later, even though they knew exactly what they're getting themselves into, right? So I think just that is just keeping yourself accountable. And I think you should be harsh to yourself. And I think that's what...
To keep yourself accountable.
Oh, yeah. Not to keep yourself...
I think it's important to distinguish between the difference of targeting your self or targeting your efforts toward achieving a goal. Because if you're targeting yourself, then you're just destroying the device you are supposed to use to achieve a goal. But if you're targeting your efforts, well, you're doing it wrong.
That's true. Yeah. And I think I agree with that, because one of the fundamental concepts that I go by every single day is your thoughts lead to behavior, which leads to action, right? So you're right in terms of that. If you're having harsh thoughts about yourself, that could go either way. But are you going to let that affect your behavior in a good way that will cause some positive action, which now tries to fix the thought that you were having initially, right? So I think, yes, you want to make sure the loop is on the good side, mm-hmm. right? You being harsh on yourself leads to something better and improvements on whatever you're stressed about. That's important. But once you're in that cycle, I think that could show you so much improvement in life. Just in terms of your personal growth, that I think that's really, really important to have. Especially for competition prep, if you're trying to prep, you gotta tell yourself that, right? There are gonna be, I think majority of your prep is gonna look like, holy crap, I don't wanna do this, what the hell? But then you gotta know why you're doing it. You gotta kind of remind yourself the purpose. And then at the end of the day, just know that it's an option. You don't wanna do it, don't. There's nothing stopping you from that, right? Yeah. What's the worst that could happen? I mean, you just cancel your show and that's it. So again, that part I think really helped me and really helped me stay on track, and just kind of visualizing the moment I think also helped a lot. So just manifesting me being on stage, me being proud of the progress I made in the last whatever amount of years and showcasing it, I think that also, that helps with the motivation part. I think just visualizing that just motivates you and just pushes you to keep going.
You need to also have a point of reference, a specific type of body you're trying to achieve, whether you're natural or not. I think the reference point is important to just compare and see where you are at. So how do you manage to do that? I don't know if you actually did have a reference point, whether you started comparing yourself to someone or not, mm-hmm. but how do you manage having this comparison at the same time not being too crazy about it and therefore don't have body dysmorphia?
So I'm glad you mentioned the last part, body dysmorphia, right? During competition prep, your body dysmorphia is at its highest. It is at its peak.
And it's ironic because you're trying to go for a lifting competition.
I know, right? And then as you go deeper into your prep, you would look at yourself, you're like, all right, I am lean, but I look like crap. And I think that's where the part of having a coach plays in hand, because having a third person who knows what they're doing in terms of this sport and them telling you, like, all right, either of the two things, right? Hey, it's not working out. We need to change something and pick up the pace and catch up to whatever you're missing on, right? Or you're doing good. I think just that validation can really, really help with body dysmorphia. Because to be honest, my family telling me, hey, you look good. Of course I look good, right, to my family. But do I look good in terms of my the sport that I'm going in, right? Because they're not a part of that sport. So I think, yeah, that's sure, that can make a difference a little bit. But I think someone from that field telling you, like, hey, everything's good, just giving you that validation is really, really important. But to go back on that question of how do you, what do you compare yourself to? What are you chasing? Very tricky. Because think about it, the first time you're going to step on stage, you don't have a comparison. So, and comparing yourself to others, you should not. Unless there's someone who's freakily really similar genetically and everything to you, right?
I see.
Because as a bulk, yes, you can be like, oh, my physique is similar to X person, right? But when you're going on a cut and preparing for a competition, you can see almost every single muscle in your body.
So how do you know whether you're going in the right direction or not?
You don't.
Oh, shoot.
And I think, again, that's where a coach helps, because they can guide you, like, hey, based on their previous experience from other competitors, this is how much more time you need.
Mm-hmm.
So either we need to slow it down or we need to push it forward because you're slacking.
Mm-hmm.
When you're doing it alone, especially for the first time, you have no idea, right? You don't know how much more you can push. The last 4 weeks of your prep, you're shredded. Like you, well, you should be. You should be shredded, right? You should be pretty much peeled, where people look at you and they're like, either of the two things. They're like, holy crap, like what do you do? Or like, what do you take, right? Or are you sick? Like, are you suffering from a disease, right? So it's either of the two things. So again, the last 4 weeks are pretty intense. And then it's honestly, just by yourself, it's hard to even tell the differences. Unless you have pictures that you took every single week, which is, again, important for you to kind of reflect back on and pinpoint, like, all right, this is where I'm improving. This is where I'm improving. This is where I saw improvement. Cool. Right? This is where I'm lacking. So next week, I'm going to push more here. But I think it's easier said than done. If you're doing it yourself, it is extremely hard. The second time you do it, the third time you do it, it becomes easier because now you are literally comparing yourself to how you looked 2 weeks prior to your competition prep the last time, how you looked 3 weeks prior. So now you have checkpoints for every single week to look at yourself and be like, all right, I'm either looking better than last time or worse than last time. Most likely it's better than last time, right? So now you kind of know when to pull back and not let yourself deplete that much, which is, I think, what I made a mistake of. I depleted myself way too much. But again, second time around, it was better. I assume the third time I tried, it'll be better. But then the fourth time I try, it will keep on getting better. And I think that's the main reason why people compete for years and years before even turning pro. Because of that concept is that you're learning about your own body. Even if you're working with a coach, the coach and yourself, you both are working or learning about your own body. So there's nothing to compare to. If it's your first time, you just kind of work with it. Your coach learns about your body. You learn about your body, how your body reacts to certain foods, how much time you need, how you're supposed to look X amount of weeks before prep. And I think all these things matter. But yes, body dysmorphia is at its highest during prep. And it's dangerous, dude. Because you could be peeled, ready for competition, literally ready for the competition 2 weeks out. And you tell yourself, dude, I'm fat. Look at all the skin I can grab on my stomach. Like, what? Like, I need to lose more weight. And I think that is, mentally, that's very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's another part of body dysmorphia, which is after competition prep. Because you have seen yourself that peeled and shredded, now putting on fat for intentionally, like for a bulking phase, it's so difficult. Because now you're seeing yourself put on fat slowly, lose that definition that you kind of had, right, for your prep, and just seeing that go slowly over time, it is so hard. But again, that's what kind of differentiates good athletes from bad athletes. You just got to have faith in it, right? You got to know that that's still there. And the fat is just covering it. It's still there. It doesn't disappear, right? So just have faith in it. Keep going. Keep pushing it.
I see.
And I think that's all.
Before we finish up, I wanted to go back to your coaching career.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of these mental obstacles and the strategies to overcome are just within you. And you have agency. You have chosen a path. You go for it, regardless of how hard it is, you'll try. But it's very different when you're trying to coach someone who hasn't formed that mentality. And it's tricky because you might push them too hard. They just break, they just give up. So how do you implement that culture into your clients? And how do you make sure that the day they are content and technically your project is over, you have cultivated the culture that they can maintain, rather than 6 months in, they're going to be back to their old habits, their previous way, and it's the same thing all over again.
Yes. Again, it's different for where you fall on the spectrum of beginner to advanced, right? I think coaching people who are in the intermediate level, advanced level, is so much easier than coaching a beginner. Because the problem, like you said, with the beginner, you need to work on their mindset first before even diving deeper into their actual program and pushing them. You can't push a beginner. If you push a beginner, they're just gonna ghost you, right? Basically. So I think that's why it's important where you fall on the spectrum, but let's talk about a beginner, like you said, right? Again, my primary focus, one of my primary focuses, right, is comfort. I want to make sure my client is comfortable with what I'm providing them, with what I'm telling them. And I think that comes down to the coach as well. You need to make sure that they're being honest with you. And you need to create a friendly environment where they can share. If a program's not working for them, they can share that. And they're supposed to share that. I mean, they are paying for that program, right? So I think that's why it's your job as a coach to build a very friendly and a safe environment where you again remind them again and again and again that they need to be honest with you. And if something's not working, let them know. And that's my job as a coach, is to make sure I make the certain changes and make it comfortable for you again so that you can follow it. Again, like I said, it is important for you to push yourself, all those things we talked about, bulking phases, cutting phases. Yes, it's important. Not as a beginner. I think as a beginner, you just need to get in the habit. If you're not in the habit, how are you even talking about putting whatever X amount of muscle? Like, first, you got to build the habit first, stay consistent with it. And that doesn't take long. It could be a month, 2 months. After that, now you're good to kind of push, right? And that's where I think my clients would see a change in my perspective, where before I was all like, you know what? It's all right. It's all right. I'll make those changes. Let's dive back. And I'll really try and make all these changes. When I see, all right, they're pretty comfortable with it. They are following it.
Now
I go, I'm like, all right, now we have the habit. So we have the foundation pretty strong and wide. Now let's push you. And that builds a nice pyramid where now you're going at a pretty, you have a solid foundation, you have a solid base. So now when you go deeper into your program, the likelihood of you falling out or failing is less. What people often do, start off, hey, I want to do this, I want to do this. I've never been to the gym, but I want to do this. All right, here's your 5-day plan. Here's your 6-day cardio plan. Here's your nutrition plan, tells you exactly what to track, how many calories, whatever. So now they're building a block on top of a block on top of a block. They're building a tower instead of a pyramid. As the tower, it's going to fall eventually. It's going to be unstable because the base is not strong enough. You need to put out that time, 2 months, 3 months, 1 month, whatever it takes you, and make sure the foundation is strong, right? And coming back to my coaching, that's where I have my lifestyle approach, is that if someone's an engineer, and they have three kids, they're not going to have that much time to put into fitness. So it's my job as a coach to make sure that whatever I'm giving, whatever workout plan, diet plan I'm giving them, it's based on their lifestyle. And I think that's why a lifestyle approach should be the one and only way of doing fitness. It should, unless you're an advanced, unless you're an athlete, then it just kind of sucks. Like, there's no balance.
Unless,
like,
you got an actual job.
Yeah, then you're going to just kind of push it, right? But if you want to be healthy, which is, again, 95% of the people, they just want to improve their health, right? Then I think having a lifestyle approach is, it should be there. It's not even a question. It should be there. Yeah, so I think to answer your question, yes, I think taking it slow, keeping a high focus on your comfort level, I think that's very, very important.
Got it, man. Got it. Thank you, Arbob. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
this was a really lovely conversation. So many good points. Very productive. Well, yeah. Thank you.
I think this was, and I think a lot of beginners would find this pretty helpful, just knowing that it doesn't have to be crazy hard, right? The example I give everyone is, let's say you're starting a course, you're starting school. You start pretty easy, and then you build on that, right? Same thing with starting a job. You start with your training, which is your good, solid foundation. Now imagine if you just mess around in your training, you learn nothing. And now you have these four projects and you're managing X amount of people. You're going to mess everything up, right? So again, you got to make sure, like every other aspect of your life, fitness should be no different. It should be the same thing. Put time in your foundations. Once you have that in line, then build upon that. And slowly, within a few weeks, months, you will be at a state where you never thought you would even be.
Got it. Thank you, man. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening to the Zones Out podcast. I'm Amirali Bigdari. Till next time, have a nice day. Bye-bye.